Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Cult Popture Podcast. It is just AJ with you right now. As some of you will know, we were originally planning to do a Q&A episode as something a bit more relaxed this week, as Richard and Jess are in Japan, and we didn't quite have as much time as we usually do to plan this sort of thing. However, we recorded the episode, and it was great, but the Wi-Fi is apparently so tenuous over there in Japan that I can't get Richard's half of the conversation. So what we're going to do today instead is we're going to give you some of our exclusive Patreon content for free on the main feed in the hopes that it might whet the appetites of some of you who are on the fence about joining our Patreon. So consider this the Patreon sampler pack episode. But before we get into what you're about to listen to, I do just want to say that we now have a Cult Popture Discord server. So Discord, if you don't know, is a chat room kind of thing where you can go on and join, and you'll be able to chat with Richard and I, as well as other people who listen to the show or watch the videos, about all things Cult Popture and all things pop culture. So please, there's a link in the description of this episode. Check that out, join the Discord, and come chat with us. And let's get to know one another. Let's hang out. Let's shoot the shit. And I've also started my Movember campaign. This is a foundation in New Zealand that focuses on men's health. So every November, anyone who's participating, they shave off their beards and try and grow a moustache, all in the name of awareness and funding for research for like testicular cancer and prostate cancer, as well as men's mental health. But this year, I thought I'd do something a little bit different. Instead of shaving my beard off, I shaved most of it off and left a ridiculous samurai master moustache, which makes me look very stupid. So please donate. There'll also be a link to this in the description, as well as the link to the Discord, as well as a link to the Patreon. So please get on that and support men in New Zealand, and support Cult Popture on Discord, and support Cult Popture financially with Patreon. So the episode you're going to be hearing on today's sample pack, we're going to be hearing our film franchise follow-ups episode, which is our $5 tier on Patreon. You pay $5 a month and you'll be able to hear an exclusive podcast where we revisit an old franchise that we've covered before and look at like a TV show or a video game or another movie in that series that has come out since we've covered it. And this episode is the Lord of the Rings special features, because, you know, we started the Lord of the Rings episode and everyone was like, oh, you've got to watch the special features. So we did. We watched them all, and you'll be able to hear our thoughts on them coming up. And after that, you'll hear an episode of generic_movie_podcast.exe, which is our $10 tier exclusive podcast, where our $10 tier patrons vote on a movie and then we watch it, you know, and review it, and that's the episode. So that episode you'll be hearing is on The Shawshank Redemption. So bit of a long episode potentially, because there's too many episodes, sort of like what we've been doing for the last couple of weeks actually. So check it out. You'll be hearing the Lord of the Rings film franchise follow-ups and The Shawshank Redemption generic movie podcast. And if you like them, then please consider joining the cult and donating at www.patreon.com/cultpopture. It's probably also worth mentioning that our $1 tier allows you to suggest and vote on which franchises that we watch. Every second film franchise fortnights is Patreon decided, so go check that out. Here's the episodes. Thanks, guys. Richard, okay, first point of talk. First talking point about the Lord of the Rings extended special features, right? Because yep. That's what we're doing. This film franchise follow-ups, where we do a follow-up on a franchise we've covered. This month, we spent 12 hours as long as the actual trilogy itself.
I think it's longer than that.
Like, it is, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So long.
Yeah, watching the special features because people asked us to. And I don't know how many of those people are patrons, but, you know, we did the original trilogy and we did the Hobbit trilogy and people were like, well, you've got to watch the special features. And we were like, oh, yeah, it's like a couple documentaries, right? We'll do that. This has been a investment. But first talking point, this is one of the biggest gripes I have. And I don't have many gripes, but one of the biggest gripes I have. So the DVD box set that we have of that we both have. Of
well, they were both series, borrowed.
Yeah, yeah, we've both borrowed. It's sort of, if you haven't seen it, it's like a box and in it there are three DVDs, but they're kind of made to look like leather-bound books, right? And they're like, there's a green one, a red one, and a blue one.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know about you, but Fellowship is green, is the green one, and that's fine. Then Two Towers is red and Return of the King is blue. I don't know what it is, but it feels like Return of the King should be red and Two Towers is the more blue movie.
Yeah, I totally agree. I was thinking about this.
It really annoyed me. If you'd asked me, before I checked, if you'd asked me what colours, I would have been like, oh, it goes green, blue, red, the colours of... Is Two Towers a more blue film than... Return of the King's a more red film because there's a lot more lava and stuff. So I don't know. It annoys me that they and red feels like a more ultimate colour as well.
Because it's like, stop.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, that's the first thing I wanted to talk about. I'm glad you agree, and it's not just some, like, you know, when you talk about colors, it can often be like just something in your own psyche that makes you associate colors with certain things. But hey.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. So yeah, we've watched these things. So let's explain how they work. So,
yep.
Each movie has four discs,
yep.
Two discs for the film, two discs for special features. And so the first one, it kind of works that the first one's more about pre-production, second one's more about filming and post-production. So each film has one about J.R.R. Tolkien.
I think it's Tolkien.
Tolkien. Yeah. And then it has one about writing the script, like what they had to change. Mm-hmm. It's got one about Weta.
Yeah.
It's got one about the bigatures, which are miniatures, but they're big. And what else have we got on the first disc?
You've got a premiere one. It always ends with the premiere.
Oh yeah. So I was talking about the first disc.
You've jumped the gun. There are some that are just random ones that are included.
Yeah. So each film has like specific ones to that film. And then, the second disc you've got, there's one called Cameras in Middle Earth, which is always the best one, which is just about filming.
Which is we could have just watched each of them and that would be enough for filming.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then, there's one about post-production and one about the premiere and,
Very, very long, guys. And yeah, I don't,
God,
please don't.
Some of these are long.
Please don't interpret this as me saying that they're bad, because these are some of the most enriching behind-the-scenes special features I've ever seen for a film. But with a lot of times we got to kind of measure the return on investment with stuff like this, right? So, like, the Patreon podcast, there's probably about 10 people who can listen to this episode. And we've done more work, I'm not even exaggerating, we've done more work in terms of man hours for this episode of Film Franchise Follow-Ups than we did for like the National Treasure episode of the mainline podcast.
Yeah, if I was on my computer at work, I could tell you like how long this is compared to other franchises. And this... watching these Lord of the Rings special features is probably in the top 10 longest franchises we've done.
And it would be. And look, again, it's weird that I'm complaining about it because we had to rush it to watch it all within, and like we still even missed our deadline. We missed doing it for last month's Film Franchise Follow-Ups, and then it was supposed to come out on the 1st, theoretically, of March, and now it's the 8th at the time of recording this. Just it took so long to watch. But that being said, man, I thought these were great.
Yeah. Yeah, some of them definitely are. Like, there's a definite, like, yeah, certain ones interest me more than others, and certain ones would interest you more than others, and yeah, we might know the same ones, and yeah. So it is very, very interesting, though. So should we just go through it?
I have no plan.
I don't even know how to discuss these.
I have no plan. I guess we could go through our favorite ones that we remember, or any interesting observations, and wrap up this 12-hour workload into a 45-minute podcast for 10 people.
So,
it's
from Fellowship. One of my favorite moments across the whole thing. And so, yeah, like we talked about this, like just like we both when we started, I think Return of the King special features, we were like, man, we should have taken notes. I remember the Return of the King ones really well, but yeah, some of the other two sort of, you know, have all blurred together. But yeah,
the way we do, like the convenient way of doing film franchise fortnights is that we only have to remember everything for 2 weeks at the most, right? And sometimes I watch an entire franchise in the second week and just take the first week off.
Yeah, that's what I'm about to do with the Millennium series, because I haven't started that yet.
Yeah, but this is a case where it's like we probably spent about 3 weeks all up watching these special features, which means that by the time we get to the end of the Return of the King disc, I've forgotten everything that watched.
I've conditioned my brain to forget media after 2 weeks.
Yeah, I've written down some notes. I might actually pull them up now, but I cannot confirm. I definitely didn't do it for very long, so I've got some notes maybe that I can. But yeah, you what was the one right that you liked?
Yeah, so my favorite moment across all of it, and it's such a like Kiwi moment. Mm-hmm. So it's the documentary about the creation of Hobbiton. And so the thing about Hobbiton is they made it like a year earlier before they were filming there so that it could like grow. Like so that the flora and fauna could, you know, take it over and look like it's been lived in. And so it's this guy's filming a vlog in the car and on the way to Hobbiton, and he's like, all right, so today's the big day. We've been working really hard at this for about 6 weeks now, and we're really happy with what we've done. It's, you know, the army's been in here and we've been excavating it and everything like that, but today's actually the first day that Peter is going to see it, so we're all pretty nervous and we're pretty excited, but so yeah, just can't wait to see what he says and what he thinks of it, and so let's see what he thinks. And then it cuts to like Peter arriving at Hobbiton, and there's like this, I don't know, mirth is that right term, where it's like, you know, like a hill kind of thing that you can look out over all of Hobbiton, and they're like, oh yeah, so we've got this over here and this is going to be coming in, and Pete's like, yeah it's good.
Yeah. A similar thing happens after Elijah Wood talks about when he asked him what, because Peter Jackson didn't see the final cut of Return of the King till the premiere.
Yeah.
And then Elijah Wood's like, and you go up to him afterwards and you ask him, what'd you think? He's like, oh, that's good. It's good.
Yeah. It's so Kiwi.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's such a New Zealand thing, too. Just that's as excited as we get about things. It's just like, yeah, no, it's good. Yeah. 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 And, yeah. It's so funny, because I mean that's as good as they could have hoped for. That's like the best reaction possible. But he's like, yeah, it's good. So down there, like, yeah, we're gonna get it. And he's like, okay, cool.
yeah, it's amazing the reverence people have for Peter Jackson in this document, in these documentaries, right? Like this, I think. If I was to make a broad statement about this whole, all these documentaries that's nothing we should mention. We only watched the documentaries. We didn't watch like
the photo galleries.
Yeah, yeah. Like these documentaries, man, it's made me realize. You talked in the actual episode of Lord of the Rings about how like this is unprecedented for a film, and the production on this like had never been seen and will probably never be seen again, I think is what you said. And this really drives that home. And like if you ignore the manpower and the time investment and da da da, that the thing that really got me was like, how much fucking money does New Line have? Good lord. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. they must have financed, like, I mean, we can find out, can't we, how much they cost. But I think at first I'm like, it must be like billions upon billions of dollars. And then I'm like, no, I think I just don't fully comprehend how large $1 billion is.
Yeah,
I think that's
yeah.
more what's happening here is that it's actually a lot more money than I thought it was. Because I wouldn't say they take their time, because they certainly ended up having to rush each film to like meet the date. But like, they just turn, there are plenty of times across these documentaries where Peter Jackson turns up at work and he's like, oh, let's do this $400 million animation that I just thought of now. Mm. Let's have Legolas skate across a Mummikill's trunk. You know, and it's like that was like a spur of the moment thing. There's one about how one of the art directors was like, "Oh, in the Return of the King novel, it mentions that there were beasts, but it doesn't define what they were. So let's include them." And they just go, "Oh yeah, let's create a new CGI beast." And that beast, I didn't remember in the actual films. Yeah. I didn't remember until I watched the special features. And I was like, "Oh yeah."
Do you want to know how much they cost to make?
Oh yeah, tell me.
281 to 330 million.
That's so much less than I would have assumed, but I guess I just don't know how much money that is.
Yeah, and I guess it's not like they're having to pay, like, I'm guessing that doesn't include like the salary of every Weta person, you know?
Don't you? I reckon it does, because where else? No, I reckon that
they pay Weta, and then Weta pays people salaries as a company, you know?
So it would be included in that then.
Well, no, but like it wouldn't work out that it's like Weta's salary is paid directly by their budget.
Mm.
Like, yeah. I think how much money Weta has to pay everyone would probably be more than what they're getting, but because they're like a company and they can, you know.
Yeah. Still, man, working on these, if you were passionate, like even slightly passionate about whatever facet of filmmaking you're into, this would have been like a dream come true.
Hmm.
Like, not to sound cheesy and not to reiterate what I'm sure people have been saying for, you know, 15 years now, but it's like, this is everything about the Lord of the Rings behind the scenes. Even when it was stressful, people are in like tears of joy that they get to work on this and do all these things that they got to do, you know. And it was inspiring, dude. I watched it and I was like, there was a long time ago when I really wanted to be a filmmaker. And this has somewhat reignited that flame, you know? Like, it inspired me. And that's the first time in ages that anything like this has inspired me to be like...
Yeah, they are really, yeah, inspiring like that, eh?
Yeah, yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. So one of my favorite documentaries was the one on the Two Towers that goes into Gollum, how they made Gollum and how Gollum came to be. And like, you could do a whole 2-hour documentary on Gollum, probably.
That's all I wanted. Yeah, when I put in the Two Towers, I was like, I'm just going to watch this one first because I need this to like be able to get through it.
Yeah, yeah. So that one was really cool. It was really interesting to see how they started with a model that didn't look anything like Andy Serkis. And you actually see that in Fellowship of the Ring and you know, Shrouded in Darkness. That's, if you look at what their original design for Gollum was, you can tell that the eyes you see peeking through the ladder belong to that model and not the one that we eventually got. Which is kind of weird because you still hear him shout Shire Baggins, meaning Andy Serkis would have been on board at some point before they premiered Fellowship. But then, yeah, Andy Serkis came on board fully, and basically they worked out through just how much emotion Andy Serkis was putting into the performance that they needed to base Gollum's face off Serkis's so that they could, you know, replicate the facial expressions. And through all that, they kind of accidentally invented motion capture, which is amazing. And it's talked about in this documentary, like this fun new thing they discovered, and it's like, now this is like, you know, the industry standard for this kind of thing. So that was really cool. What did you think of that one?
I also enjoyed that one.
Mm.
Another one that I really liked was the I think it's the first one on the second disc of Fellowship. And it's just all the actors talking about how much they like each other.
Yeah.
Like, because it's them telling the stories of, like, how they met and because how important it is for them to get along, especially the four hobbits. Mm. And they're all very much, like, it's just them talking about, like, how great they are to work with. And there's, like, the real funny one is Billy Boyd and Orlando Bloom, like, meeting at the airport, and because they're like, oh, by the way, Billy, like, you're going to meet this guy, Orlando. He's flying to New Zealand as well. It was, like, Billy's birthday. And so they, like, had all the champagne on the plane, and they had a stopover in LA, which meant they crossed over the date line. And then so they had all the champagne again because it was a birthday again. And then they, like, showed up in New Zealand just, like, absolutely pissed.
Yeah, that's what I mean, man. Like, every aspect of... Imagine being an actor on Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It would have been, like... one of the most enriching, fulfilling experiences of your life, you know? And it's funny watching someone like Viggo Mortensen, who's very soft-spoken, but then
he's
you see him dry. Yeah, you see him, like, with a sense of humor. A very interesting guy, especially after seeing, like, Green Book and seeing, like, how much of a chameleon he can be acting-wise. Mm. It's, like, it's funny to see him real life because he talks like this, and it's very quiet. I imagine they would have to boost the audio quite a bit.
Yeah, because I can't hear you right now.
There you go. And he does this while making, like, slightly dated gay jokes. Like, there's a lot of them in this between the hobbits and Viggo, because Viggo would, like there's one part where Dominic Monaghan is like, he's talking about how Viggo got real close to a woman who was playing one of the riders of Rohan, but she had a beard because, like, they gave her a fake beard because she had to be a man in the story. Mm. And, like, Dominic Monaghan's talking all about how he got very, very close to these. He's like, you know, implying stuff, yeah. and then Viggo's
like, I can neither confirm nor deny what Dominic might have said.
It's so great. It's like such a strange sense of humor, because I think if I was to meet Viggo and hear him talk like that, I would assume he'd be someone I would think he takes it very seriously, and I shouldn't, like, joke around.
Yeah, and I think
he does.
Yeah, like, yeah. But there's a real funny one. There's the where they talk about their scale doubles. Mm. So in each film, each hobbit has to have a person that, like, plays them who's the right height against, you know, the men and stuff like that. And so they're all like, so there's, like, this Indian dude called. I can't remember, but there's, like, this guy, Kieran, and they're, like, 4 foot tall kind of thing. But they all, like, talk about this Indian dude, Kieran, who's, like, tiny, but he would just boss around Viggo. Yeah. It's so funny.
Yeah.
Viggo, like, caught a fish for everyone, and then he was, like, this guy was, like, screaming at Viggo for not cooking it right. And he's, like, terrified of him, and it's so funny.
And there's one where there's a clip you see from one of the battles, I think on the third disc, where I think it's Kieran, but he's got, like, white face on because it's a wide shot, so you have to see him with white skin and not his dark skin. And he's, like, he looks up at the camera and he's, like, one of the warriors hit me, so they're going to give me a kiss now. And this, like, lady, like, gives him a kiss on the cheek. And, like, again, like, everyone, and I know it's edited this way, but everyone either looks like they're having the time of their life or they're, like, having a profound emotional experience.
Yeah.
You know, there's never anyone, like, that's just like, oh, yeah, this is just the job.
It's like, true. In that same one where he talks to me, he's like, they had to give me a kiss now. They're talking about it beforehand, and it's either Peter or Viggo, I can't remember, but they're like talking about how the scale doubles are like there, so there's, like, you know, 100 horses galloping through and the scale doubles are on them, and he's like, and they could fall off and no one would know they're there. And he's, like, in tears laughing at the thought of these people getting, like, trampled. It's so funny. Like, it's so inappropriate.
I also really liked one of the random ones that I really liked was there's one on the third disc about horses, about all the horses they work with.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's just a wonderful little featurette of, like, just you learn, like, Viggo, like, just really bonded with his horse, and he's talking about his horse and how it was his best friend he'd made in New Zealand and stuff. And it's like, man, that would have been so intense. And because Viggo, another interesting little bit of trivia is Viggo was brought on last minute because they had to recast Aragorn, and his horse was as well, apparently. So, like, he had that kinship with him of being, like, Isn't that? But that's insane as well, actually, now that I think about it, that Viggo was brought on last minute, because he's the face he's the of best Lord one. Of the Rings. Yeah. Like, yeah. You know, it's pretty insane that how, like, last minute it all ended up with some stuff like that. And what I found real interesting was the parallels to things in The Hobbit. The Hobbit trilogy, which when they happened in the Hobbit trilogy were like bad omens, but when they happened in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, it was like the seat of your pants, flying from the seat of your pants, like run and gun filmmaking style, you know?
Yeah, because Peter at the end of it describes it as like the world's largest home movie.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, there are like really, really similar things happen on both sets. Both final films were like rushed to production and like they had to rush to shoot stuff that was still happening on the final day. You know, stuff, you know, it's all over the place. But one of the things that I thought was a really interesting parallel was that one of the things we complained about in the Hobbit trilogy was that they take the big boss that is Smaug and kill him in the opening scene of the third movie. And they, without really making this parallel before till I watched these documentaries, they did the exact same thing with Saruman. And
not even in the theatrical cut.
Yeah, it was in the extended cut. And they talk about how it was supposed to be the end of the second film, but then they felt like it was anticlimactic after Helm's Deep, and then put it at the start of the third film, and how they felt like that fixed something. But if I could just point out a small blemish, I disagree. I think the death of Saruman should have been cut down and put at the end of Two Towers. Because to me, Two Towers... So if the Fellowship sets up that these two bad guys working together, Sauron and Saruman, and the more powerful one is Sauron, then the second film should be about defeating the first boss, and the third film should be about defeating the final boss. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So to me, I think Saruman's death should have been at the end of The Two Towers, because that's like that movie's, you know, won the battle but haven't won the war yet. Kind of moment.
Do you know, until you mentioned it just then, I completely forgot that we watched The Hobbit.
What's that? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like they definitely shouldn't have had been that extended talky scene. They should have. It should have just showed him like falling off the Isengard Tower at the end of Two Towers, or something small that just says like, "Yep, we've knocked one, you know, of the big bad guys off their perch."
Yeah, speaking of Christopher Lee, though, there was a, I think it's in the first one, there's a bit of them, like, directing a conversation between Ian McKellen and Christopher Lee, and it's like, fuck, imagine that. Like, imagine directing those two actors, just, like, how much, even just, like watching, like, you know, a 30-second clip of them being directed, just how much they give back.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, oh my God, that would just be like so magical to be a part, to control. Oh my God.
And because people often talk about how the film is perfectly cast. And I think that's really interesting, because watching them act is like someone like Ian Holm, right? Where it's like, of course, this is a veteran. Like, this is a dude who, you know, would be very, because he talks about how he would give a different flavor of performance each take, just so that Peter is something to work with, which is like real subtle and would be real fun to play with and edit, right? But then someone like Sean Astin, who's got like the most American accent you can get, but he's got like this perfect country England accent for Sam that he just switches back into, and like that's a small, you know, accents are kind of, I guess, acting 101, but a lot of actors can't do accents, but like all these American actors doing great, you know, English-ish accents for their characters is like a really nice touch, and something that I don't think the films would be the same if like Elijah Wood couldn't switch to that voice, you know, because he was like 19 when they shot these. So he wasn't like a veteran in that sense, you know.
Yeah, and like Orlando Bloom was cast a week before he finished acting school.
There you go. That's why he barely talks in the whole trilogy.
One other thing that was really cool, and now I've got something I want to talk to you about as well, is that how they talk about in the first one how they hired Alan Lee and John Howe.
Because
it's like these guys are like responsible for what you picture when you think of Middle Earth.
Yeah, they're like Tolkien historians who had painted picture after picture for 45 years of the images from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, and then they wrote him a letter, because Alan Lee is like notoriously a bit of a recluse, but they managed to like get his address and
write a letter. Yeah, he's an Oscar winner.
Yeah.
Alan Lee was like my favorite character.
He's so great. He's so sweet.
He's such a charming, very passionate, quiet man. And every time he was on screen, and he's got one of those voices that's very, it's almost clicky. Like it's a little bit wet, which would sound bad like if he was doing a podcast, but just like watching interviews of him, and he's just so chuffed and he's like, it's very great to be working on this kind of thing. It's like, oh, he's such a sweet man.
That brings me to very nicely to my next point, which was, so what did you think of everyone? Like, because it was very interesting seeing my sort of opinions of people change and morph and things like that, because it does feel like Elijah Wood, Billy Boy, Dominic Monaghan all got along really well and were like, you know, with the boys, and they were the ones. And then Sean Astin feels like it kind of seems like he thinks he was sort of above them.
I didn't get that at all. No,
really. I thought like Sean Astin seemed to be taking it more seriously and not in a good way.
I think it was a element of him doing method acting, because they talk about that at one point that like he basically made himself Elijah Wood's Kira, because Sam is Frodo's Kira. So yeah, I think that's definitely probably part of it. I think because Sean Astin was the only married one, I think, of the four as well. So he's got like a family and stuff that he's trying to take care of. So like there's a big scene where he has to kiss his on-screen wife at the end of Return of the King, and how awkward it felt, and how he's like, don't tell Christine, or you know, we'll tell Christine we only did one take. I don't know. I definitely don't think my opinions necessarily changed too much on people, but I would say about Peter Jackson specifically, man, what a daddy. It is no wonder you and me, the types of people we are, the way you and me look, that like we've joked before about how every New Zealand dude who's into film looks a little bit like Peter Jackson, you know? And this is like, I don't know if it's because of Peter Jackson. We certainly didn't style ourselves based off Peter Jackson. I used to tell people that I look like Peter Jackson because this is what you look like when you care more about movies than your own appearance. But like, that's part of what's so inspiring about it, is to watch this like fat dude in shorts and jandals potter about this like massive empire he's built, just, you know, commanding things, and everyone loves him. And it's like, what an inspiration, man. This is the this is the best thing that a chubby nerd has ever achieved.
You know, but like, then he got real thin and betrayed us, and then he got fat again.
now no one likes what he's making anymore, so
and now he's what?
Now no one likes what he's making anymore. So, although he made a documentary that people seem to really like, haven't seen that yet.
And he's making another one that people are excited for. So, how do you do?
Well, anyone else you wanted to talk about? I thought we've talked about Andy Serkis a bit, and how he seems these days. He seems kind of desperate. But this is like, I think these documentaries are the best time to see Andy Serkis.
Yeah, man, he's so. Like watching him as well, when they talk about like casting him and how they were like, because he went in for basically a vocal audition, voice only, and then just how he does the character, and it's like, he does seem like a good time.
Yeah, the way his face screws up when he's like playing Gollum, people were like, he has to be on set. He has to. That's how it all kind of started. But like, there's a part I really liked in one of the last ones where they had to get him reacting to Frodo telling him that he was about to destroy the ring right before she lobs Leia, I think. And they film it in Peter Jackson's house so that they have a familiar like thing for the animators to have a reference here. And good Lord, he's such a diehard, man. Like he's on a carpet And he just, and he talks about it in the documentary. He's like, it's so typical of Lord of the Rings that one minute you're on Ruapehu, like rumbling around in rocks, and then the next minute you're on Peter Jackson's carpet. And he gives this beautiful performance with like half an hour of prep time of like the face of an addict realizing that their drugs are going to be destroyed. And it's so beautiful. And I was like, this is before Andy Serkis wasn't getting enough work.
Before
that
he was in 13 going on 30.
Yeah, yeah. This is like Andy Serkis got his big break. And it's very inspirational and very cool to see him just be like one of the guys and like enjoying his job and doing the best job he can do.
Yeah. Another thing I want to say about his what's it called? The image we have of each person kind of thing. Mm. But I love at the end of the last documentary, Viggo Mortensen thanks the guy interviewing him.
Yeah. And then he thanks us.
Yeah. And he says to all the Kiwis out there, Kia ora.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, Viggo.
I love Viggo now after watching him. He seemed like such a good dude.
Another moment that I loved in it was the last documentary, I think, of the last one. But he talked so the world premiere for each film was for the first two films was in London, and then they had a Wellington premiere, which not everyone could come to, but it was like still quite cool that it's, you know, it's in Wellington. But there was like always they had to have the world premiere in London. But at the premiere of the Wellington premiere of the Two Towers, Peter Jackson brought the New Line executive on stage, hadn't told him anything, and then is like, oh, we've got so-and-so here from New Line who's here to announce where the world premiere of Return of the King's going to be. And the guy's like, Wellington, New Zealand, because he like can't not say that. And they have a year to work out to like, it's so funny.
Yeah. Did you find any elements of tragedy considering The Hobbit while watching how happy people were before The Hobbit like left the hole it left?
Yeah.
You know, there's so many parts where it's like, oh, this is so sad now. But like so many times when Peter Jackson puts his foot in his mouth, like now that we're watching it at this time, like I put something on my personal Instagram story of it, of like this clip of Peter Jackson going like, man, it's no wonder no one's even shot three films of this magnitude at the same time before. It's quite a tough job, and I certainly won't be doing it again. And then like cut to The Hobbit with it's so like, ah, why did you succinctly say that? Like, why did you put your foot in your mouth? You like signposted a tragic moment to happen now.
But to be fair, he clearly didn't want to.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That is true.
Yeah. Poor guy.
One thing I want to talk about is the writing process, because I have a massive
crush. Next, you're
going to
want to talk about the editing, aren't you?
Yeah, the editing was cool. I don't know if I have too much to say about it, but the writing was cool. Philippa Boyens, who's one of the three writers, first of all, massive crush on her now. I thought she was such a smart and awesome like lady that I was just like, man, you are so like she had to write a prologue that goes at the start of Fellowship, and it went from being like this massive thing to she just scaled it down in like one night to something that's absolutely like good enough for the start of the film, you know.
Should we get her on the podcast?
I would love to get Philippa Boyens on the podcast. Her most recent work includes Mortal Engines. But the thing that I thought was real interesting, a few times they talk about the stuff that are in the books that they didn't include in the movie. And I thought that was real interesting, because they are just shy. They get just shy of saying, this wasn't very good. Like, this part that Tolkien wrote wasn't very good.
Yeah.
Like, one of the greatest, you know, high fantasy writers of all time. This part was pretty stupid. Like, they talk about, like, how they had to rejig Faramir's character so that he was interesting. They had to remove a huge section from the end of Return of the King called The Scouring of the Shire, where Saruman, who didn't die originally in the book, returns to the Shire and burns it down. And they talk about how, oh, like, it felt like this was where it needed to end. And it's like, no, what it is that sounds fucking stupid and anticlimactic to have that be in the book. I'm so glad they didn't do that in the movie, you know? Like, there are a few other moments where I was like, you are towing the line of saying, I thought Tolkien was an idiot for writing this part. It clearly betrays the character and or the you know, moments in the story. And it's real funny to watch them not say that, I guess, but infer that, you know?
Mm. Yeah, totally. So what ones didn't you like? I personally wasn't very interested in the Tolkien history ones that were in everything.
Yeah, I don't think you needed three of them.
Yeah, I was like, oh, okay. Like a feature length one on the first one would have been cool. Mm. But it's like, oh, cool. And then he was friends with C.S. Lewis again.
And he had the all those historians, they're like, and he had a very peculiar way of thinking about blah blah blah. And it's like, shut up. I don't care.
Oh yeah, it does, like, it feels kind of sad to, like, devote your life to studying another person's life, like another single person's life, you know?
Right. I don't know if I'd and say to, it's like, too sad.
Huh?
I don't know if it's too sad. I think it depends who the person is, maybe.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just, for me, it feels sad. Right. I mean, I'm sure, you know, these people are perfectly fulfilled. But, yeah, it just, something about, like, yeah, the amount of, I mean, I would love people to study me like that.
Mm, yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, I don't want to be studying Tolkien.
Old Tolks.
Yeah, the Tolkien. What else was there? What else was there?
Oh, there's so much, and we needed to take notes, but we don't. And I'm like out of all my mental talking points, I think. Yeah, I'm trying to think of other things I didn't like. There were things like ones on Foley or sound design that I probably wouldn't have wanted to watch, but when I watched them, I was like, this is so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
The Foley one especially, I was like, good Lord, man. Like, can you imagine that the world needs a movie about a Foley artist, because it's such an intriguing job. So if you don't know, well, you probably, I don't know how niche is Foley as a term. People will know what Foley is.
Yeah, we don't need to explain it.
It's like sounds things make. It's like lip syncing, but for footsteps and rocks.
Yeah, so it's like, but there's quite a lot, because obviously with this, you're talking about fantastical creatures and stuff like that. And so there's a really interesting one where they talk about the Mummikill.
Yeah, which is the giant elephant.
The giant elephants. And they're like, they can't make elephant noises because when they fall over and get killed, people will go, oh, the poor elephant.
Yeah.
So the sound they used is a horse orgasming. Like, so this guy had to, like, get in there with a little microphone and sound recorder as they, like, extracted semen from a horse.
Yeah.
And then it's, like, slowed down and you know, there's pitch shifted and whatnot. But it's so funny that that's, like...
Yeah. One of my favorite sounds they got was the sound of giant two-ton rocks being slingshotted across Gondor into the monsters. And the way they did that is they got these big concrete slabs and held them up on cranes and just dropped them. And they buried microphones in the ground so that they could get, like, what does it sound like from this angle? And I was like, oh, my God, where New Line, where are you getting the money to pay this? Another thing, like, because no one would have done... Maybe people would have done stuff for free, but certainly not the majority of these jobs people wouldn't have done for free.
Yeah,
and so it's like someone got paid to rent a crane, someone who knows how to operate it, someone who knows how to, like, safe, like, you know, manage it safely. And it's like all that alone is like the amount of dollars that would have had to tick up every single day on this thing just astounds me.
Even like the craft services.
Yeah.
But there should have been one about the craft.
Yeah, there should
services.
Have been.
That was the only one that was missing. But yeah, it's so funny that they're talking about, like, oh, so what should, like, these two-ton rocks sound like? And then someone's just like, why don't you just go drop a bunch of two-ton rocks? And it's like, ding! Cut to. Yeah.
What else should we talk about? Who's the guy from Weta?
Richard Taylor.
Richard Taylor is always on. He talks like he's reciting. I don't want to make fun of the man too much, but, like, it's real interesting to have him. He doesn't talk like how we're talking. He talks like how he's... It's almost like he's reading these lines off a teleprompter in front of him.
but he's not very good at doing a cold read.
Yeah, but he's also not reading anything, right? You know, it's like, this is just how he talks. Very strange, but like, get on him. Like, he is one of the integral parts. Yeah, yeah. But it's, yeah, very, very funny way of, funny to hear a man talk like that. Trying to think, okay, I just don't want to stop recording and be like, I watch 12-hour documentaries just to talk about.
Yeah, I don't want to stop recording until we've recorded 12 hours. I do want to say, so there's like the last one, or like it's not even the last one, but when the last cameras in Middle Earth, it's like 80 minutes long almost, and it's and it goes through like everyone's last day on set, and it's very emotional. But you know how like everyone's like, oh, it's been 6 years of my life, like my kids have grown up, and it's finally coming to a close. I kind of had the same feeling finishing these documentaries. Yeah. No, did you get that as well?
And they're like, Lord of the Rings as a whole. Like, we've been doing this for, you know, over a month now, like Lord of the Rings content.
God, yeah, February's just that month I cared about Lord of the Rings. And I'm so glad. I mean, it seeped into March, but I'm so glad to, like, close that door.
I nearly cried at several points during the final documentaries, because it was just like, this is so beautiful, this is so happy. Like, the part that just left me stunned was the last shot they filmed for Principal Photography, when they film Frodo saying something and Peter just keeps asking for another take and asking for another take, and they just keep doing another take, and then he's like, all right, check the gate. And he goes and talks to Elijah Wood, and he hugs him. And Elijah, the camera's right up in their face, which is kind of intrusive and is very intimate. And he goes, this has been so amazing, Peter. This has been so amazing. And it's like, oh, fuck, it would be so amazing, dude.
And,
it would be the most.
Yeah, and Elijah's talking about it. He's like, he just came up to me and he was crying, and he just kept on saying, thank you.
Yeah.
And so you see Pete there being like, thank you.
I'm really crying. I've actually got tears in my eyes now talking about it, because it's so beautiful, man. It's like, I have had more of an emotional experience watching these BTS documentaries than any other like content we've done for Cult Pop Show. Like, it's so beautiful to watch them.
Do you know why it hurts so much?
Why?
It's because it was real.
Oh. Oh, it's just, it's so beautiful, and they talk about it with such, like, everyone just understood they were doing something so important, and, like, there was kind of one that made me, like, go, like, which is one of the last documentaries where one guy's like, yeah, we started this when my, 3 weeks after my son was born, and now he's about 7, I missed him grow up. And I was like, it was a weird decision to put that in the documentary. This is kind of a very tragic thing. I don't know if it was worth doing it for that. But other than stuff like that, like, oh my god, and the prosthetics, the like, just listing off all the departments now. Actually, when they won the Oscars, they talked about how they were worried that someone would have missed one department, they didn't win cinematography. So,
yeah, they weren't nominated.
That's interesting.
They won every award they were nominated for.
Right.
On Return of the King. They won cinematography for Fellowship.
Yeah. I wonder why they weren't nominated for cinematography for Return of the King.
Should we see what was nominated that year?
Yeah, and what won?
And we'll be like, oh, okay.
Oh, of course.
2004. I think you'll find it's 2003.
Yeah, but the ceremony took place in 2004.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
So, Master and Commander, Far Side of the World, 1, City of God, Cold Mountain, Girl with a Pearl Earring, and Seabiscuit.
See, yeah, Master and Commander, I don't know. Is that a particularly good-looking film?
Apparently.
Because
it's got Billy Boyd in it.
I guess, like, the thing that I'm thinking of, I guess, is, like, it's... it almost feels intentional. Like, oh, they've already won cinematography before. let's, you know.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. I just, yeah. But, yeah, it was interesting. They talked about, like, everyone was so, like, one of these awards, and they were like, but, like, everyone there would have traded their award in so that Pete could win Best Director.
Yeah, man.
Imagine if he didn't win, fuck.
I think after a while, it was a pretty safe bet. That's an amazing, that's such a good Oscars story. Why couldn't that have happened this year? Like something deserving winning everything, you know.
Black Panther.
Yeah, Black Panther.
Yeah, instead we got another Viggo Mortensen film.
Oh man, another thing that I thought was amazing was it's called Massive. It's the artificial intelligence software they use to program the battle scenes, and this technology is amazing. And they had it in 2000? Like,
yeah, they managed to, like, seeing the shit they edited on and stuff like that, it's so low quality. Yeah. And, like,
so if you don't, Massive was basically a thing where you'd design the models for like maybe 5 or 6 different types of body, and then you just like randomize it till there's, you know, 300,000 of them. And then they program them, so they give them a directive, like kill this, or kill this. And then you just hit go, and they just do it themselves. So when you look at those battles, and you see all those, like, those soldiers running, like, in the wide shots, those are actually, like, just artificially intelligent things that are behaving very humanistic.
And so the personalities are, like, randomly generated as well. And so they accidentally made a few of them, like, cowards.
Yeah.
So in the back, they just had these ones running away from the fight.
Yeah, because I think because systematically they worked out there was more of a chance of victory to run the opposite way, which is like a computer's way of explaining cowardice. So much of this is amazing. I just say go watch it if you've never seen them before. Maybe don't watch them in such a tight time frame as we did.
Just watch the Cameras in Middle Earth.
Yeah, the Cameras in Middle Earth ones are different, and the Gollum one. I'd say those are the best ones.
And the premiere ones are quite cool because they're only like 10 minutes long.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, so that's that then, is it?
It's been so amazing, Richard.
Oh, thank you.
This has been the most amazing experience. What an emotional, like, let's make a film, dude. Announcing it on Patreon. Let's make a film.
Okay, check back this time next month. We will have made a film.
Imagine getting given the keys to something like this. What a!
I mean, I'm in the middle of making a TV episode.
Yeah,
but it's fucking doing my head in.
Is it the Lord of the Rings of TV episodes?
It is. It is.
Cool. Any final observations you want to make?
There was one thing that I almost brought up earlier, but it was just interesting. Talk about the scale doubles and how John Rhys-Davies is like the same relative height to the guys playing the hobbits as like a dwarf should be to a hobbit. So instead of having to film like the hobbits in front of a green screen and then him in front of a green screen and then a pass of the other actors, they can film them at the same time. I thought that was quite interesting and funny how that worked out. You do feel for John Rhys-Davies.
Yes, it sounds like he had hell this whole time.
But there was like the last interview with him, because he's got such a proper way of speaking, and he does. It's his last interview. He lets out like one guffaw that's like very Gimli. He's just like, oh.
That's so great. The last observation I'll make is like, this helped me a lot to understand. A lot of certain creatures or geography that are like, I didn't know that Uruk-hai and orcs were different until watching this.
There's like watching these, I was like there were some bits I was like, I straight up do not remember this at all.
Or
there's like a scene with like old Aragorn and Arwen, and I was like, when is this? It made me want to love these movies. It made me want, like, there were points where I was like, fuck, I can't wait to just put these on again. And I was like, wait, no, I don't want to do that.
Just watch them. But another one was like, I thought Gondor was like the name of the city, but the city called Minas Tirith. Gondor's like the realm. Like, if you'd asked me, like, where is the steward of Gondor? I'd be like, Gondor. But it's not. The whole place is called Minas Tirith. And there's also Minas Morgoth or something, which is the where a lot of the series will apparently take place. And that's what it's called, Minas Morgoth. Cool. Okay, look, I don't know. I guess that's it.
Yeah. I hope you half dozen people enjoyed listening to this.
Next month we're going to be doing the Shrek short films. So that'll be the next film franchise follow-ups. We've switched the timelines for it, so this has taken the spot that generic movie podcast usually takes, right?
The end of month one, yeah. So now it'll be GMP in the middle of the month and Phil Fritch's follow-up.
Until another one makes it take too long and we have to switch it.
Yeah, we get a generic movie podcast that takes us too long.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for your donations. We haven't done a shout-out in a while.
Donations are very nice.
Shall we do... I'll shout-out all our $10 patrons. No, they're $5 patrons for this, aren't they? They've changed the. They've suddenly changed the layout of Patreon. Like, it's just happened. patrons. Okay. No. Relationship manager. Patreon, for those who don't use it.
All right, jump me to
Patreon is so weird. The place you go to, like, message everyone is not the same as messages. And you can't find out who's, like, part of, like... It tells me to put filters here, but it's, like, there's no filters available.
I'll list if you like.
Thank
you very much to Alexander McDonald, Alice Ward, being close, Brent Taylor, Brown and McZant, Craig Major, David Draper, Emily Munn, Holly Frankham, Josiah Langan, Kate Pickworth-Smith, Kieran Bennett, Michael Baston, Michael Griffin, Sam Page, Sarah Velling, and Tyler Braley.
There it is. All right, everybody, thank you very much. We'll see you next time. Please tell your friends.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Very nice. My wife.
Hello, everybody, from Patreon. And no, that's it. It's just Patreon.
Yeah.
All right. That was it. Our introduction.
Thanks for listening. See you next time.
This is generic_movie_podcast.exe, where we watch a movie that you voted on. And then we discuss it. We've done Josie and the Pussycats. We've done Fat Girls.
We've done lots of Fat Girls.
And then what is, like, there's no trend to this. There's no, you know, there's no narrative to the order of movies we're doing or what people are voting on, because today we're going to be discussing The Shawshank Redemption, which... Like, all three movies we've done for GMP so far couldn't be in like, more separate, different categories, you know?
Yeah. This is our first male lead, though.
Oh, that's cool. I like having, you know, men be in the minority for a change.
Yeah, I like having myself represented on screen.
This does make up for it, though, by being... overwhelmingly male. Are there any? There's like...
There's one female appears on screen and she has no dialogue and she's cheating on her husband.
That makes it like... If this movie wasn't set in a prison, that would be worse, I think. No, actually, there's another lady when he goes to the bank at the end.
Oh, yes. Yep, you're right.
She's got lines.
Yep.
And Rita Hayworth. True. So if you don't know...
It's a very feminist film, actually.
If you don't know what we're talking about, The Shawshank Redemption, which came out in 1994, written and directed by Frank Darabont and based on the 1982 Stephen King novella Rita Hayworth and Shawshank Redemption. So just and... I thought it was and the Shawshank Redemption.
Is it actually just and Shawshank?
Let's go back to Wikipedia. I thought it was and The Shawshank Redemption. Let me see. No, it's just Rita Hayworth and Shawshank Redemption.
That's blowing my mind right now, AJ.
That recontextualizes how you're supposed to say this title to me.
How do you say it now?
Well, I used to think it was Rita Hayworth and the Shawshank Redemption, and now it's like Rita Hayworth and Shawshank Redemption. like it used to be like Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, and now it's like Harry Potter and Chamber of Secrets. Like it's like a list of different things in the characters' lives, as opposed to focusing on Rita Hayworth and her adventures with the Shawshank Redemption, which the story doesn't anyway.
The attack of Rita Hayworth and the revenge of Shawshank Redemption.
You could have just said the redemption of Shawshank. Is the Shawshank Redemption the most...
title?
No, is it the most nuanced spoiler in the title of a movie ever? You know, you've got like The Return of the King, where it's like, well, that kind of
or
blows
Lone
away
Survivor.
The ending. Yeah, yeah, or Lone Survivor. Shawshank Redemption does kind of spoil what happens, but...
Well, like, so the DVD cover spoils it.
Yeah, that's true. It's got him dancing in the rain, doesn't it?
Mm.
All right, well, Shawshank Redemption has 91% on Rotten Tomatoes, widely considered to be one of, if not the best movies ever made, or at least when I came to learn about it, that was how it was told to me. Critical response is pretty good. / amazing. And it was nominated for 7 Academy Awards in 1995, which is the most for a Stephen King adaptation. It was nominated for Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Cinematography, Best Editing, Best Sound Mixing, and Best Original Score. It did not win any of them. What won in 1995?
Forrest Gump?
Yeah. All right. No, I don't know. I'm saying Shawshank's better than Forrest Gump. I'm putting it out there. Four Weddings and a Funeral was nominated for Best Picture. Oh my gosh. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't actually seen it. I've never seen it.
It's real problematic.
Right.
It's one of those movies. But look, it's disappointing that this slipped through the cracks of every award it was nominated for.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of endearing in a way though, isn't it? Like, you know, right. Citizen Kane didn't win Best Picture.
Mm. Out of the best pictures were Forrest Gump, Four Weddings and a Funeral, Pulp Fiction, Quiz Show, and The Shawshank Redemption. I've never heard of Quiz Show.
Yeah. It was a good year.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, I think it deserved it over Forrest Gump, and I think it's more wholesome than Pulp Fiction. So it makes me more inclined to want to give it to that. Look, do we want to do a plot recap if people haven't seen it?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, what's Shawshank Redemption about, Richard?
So Andy Dufresne is sentenced to 2 life sentences at Shawshank Prison for supposedly murdering his wife and her mistress. I was gonna say
her lover,
not mistress, but yeah, her lover. And so, yeah, he ends up going to prison for it. It's we'll talk about it in a bit, but about whether or not he actually did it, because it's made out that he didn't do it, but there are subtle hints if you're looking for it that maybe he did. And while in prison, he meets Red, who is played by Morgan Freeman, who narrates the film, and essentially using his wits, Andy is able to sort of get in good with some of the guards, and he ends up like doing their taxes and stuff like that because he's a banker. And yeah, eventually things turn out pretty bad at old Shawshank Prison, and spoiler alert, Andy manages to break out.
I really like the Shawshank Redemption because if you don't know this about me, my day job is I'm a freelancer, and just watching Andy hustle, I'm like, hell yeah, dude, you're networking. He puts himself out there, makes friends with the prisoners, makes friends with the guards, and like is able to make quite a nice little nest for himself at the end, you know? So, yeah. You know what else? Andy would be so good on The Chase. if he went on the chase, he'd go for the high offer and he'd take home the money, I reckon.
Yeah. Nah, yeah, he would. He totally would.
What do we want to talk about, Richard? Because when this was voted on, which was something I suggested in the actual post on Patreon as a joke, and then it actually won, and I was like, well, that kind of defeats the purpose of someone else choosing for us. Like, when it won, I was like, ugh, I've seen The Shawshank Redemption 100 times, you know? I've seen it so many times. I don't know if I could be bothered watching it again. And then I ended up having to watch it, like, at, like, 11 o'clock, or, like, real late, and I was real just regretting, like, and just being like, oh, this is going to be so long. And, like, 2 minutes in, I was like, hell yes, strap me in. I love this movie so much.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's another one of those movies that's, like, so universally regarded as being one of the best that, like, a lot of people don't, like, in a way, it kind of gets overlooked, like, or people don't really talk about it. Like, I do know people that are like, yeah, my favorite film was The Shawshank Redemption. But then, like, 90% of people just love it. But we'll never, like, talk about it.
Yeah.
And they've seen it, like, dozens of times, you know?
Yeah. I remember I was in a conversation a few years ago with some friends who were like, Shawshank Redemption's so overrated. Holes is way better, which is just a... I don't know why you got to bring holes into it anyway. But, like, I actually defy anyone to watch this movie and not be, like, enthralled by it. Like, I can listen to a conversation that The Godfather is boring. You know, like I can understand that It's a Wonderful Life is too long. The Shawshank Redemption is captivating. It just from the get go, it just pulls you in and you enjoy it for so many reasons. And once it ends, you feel like immensely satisfied, in my opinion, anyway.
Yeah. And that's kind of the thing I want to really get down into on this podcast is that, like, it's so widely regarded as being, like, one of, if not the best films ever made. And yet, like, to me, and maybe it's different from person to person, but to me, there's no, like, one thing that really elevates it. It's kind of just flawless. Like, there's just nothing wrong with it.
Right.
And maybe that is what makes the best film. Like, there's a lot of films that I consider my favorites, and I can point you to, like, you know, a scene or an aspect of it that, like, makes it absolutely phenomenal. But, like, and I mean, maybe Shawshank, you know, it's up for debate, but maybe Shawshank never quite reaches some of the highest heights of another film, but it never drops below, like, you know, almost the maximum.
Was 1994 just when film was perfected? You know, it took them that long. I'm not kidding. Like, I actually mean that.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of feels like what you're saying is, like, because, I mean, look at all the other movies that came out in 94. Four Weddings and a Funeral. Perfect. No, but, like, you know what I mean? Like, you're right. There is nothing wrong with it. And so does that mean it took, how old is film? How old was film by this point? Maybe, like, 100 years old? 200 years old?
Yeah. No, it's, like, 90-something years old.
Right, so
turn of the century. Well, I mean, when you talk about, like, feature films, it's you know, they were very, like, turn of the century, like, early tens.
So maybe it just took this much crafting before you get a film as timeless as Shawshank Redemption. You know, because if you watch old movies that are considered the best ever made, like, a lot of the times, they couldn't be made with those same like tendencies nowadays. Like, as I said before, It's a Wonderful Life is so long. It's so long, and it's not even about what it's advertised as being about for a lot of it.
Yeah.
You know?
And also, I would say, like, there's an interesting thing, which is what we, like, one of the things we talked to David Mickey Evans about with The Sandlot, and what makes The Sandlot so great is that not setting it in the time period it came out, because it can never be dated. Like, you know, any kind of stereotypes, you were already looking at it through, like, a 50-year-long lens when it was made.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, like, you know, you look back at, like, oh, that's just how stories were told back then. Or, you know, like, oh, it's fine that James Bond rapes a lesbian into being straight, because that's what was acceptable at the time. But you know, you're already looking at it, and so it's never like anachronistic.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So I think maybe is that one of the like the check boxes for a perfect film is that it's never going to be dated.
Maybe. Well, I think, and this is proof of that, because it isn't dated. Mm. And I think it's enough like old movies in its, it's enough like movies from the 40s in its plot, like its storyline, and it's enough like movies in 2018 in its structure that it's like a perfect marriage of both of those. You know,
yeah,
it's
right.
It's just as emotionally redemptive as something like Casablanca or Wonderful Life, but it's plotted just as well as, you know, whatever the best movie that came out in 2018 is.
Yeah.
Searching. Just pick random ones. Do you know what I mean? Like it's a perfect marriage of, because if you took like a layman and went back 50 years and said, what do you think of this? This is widely regarded as being the best movie ever. They'd probably say it's too long or it's paced poorly. And if you took someone from, you know, 50 years ago and showed them something today, they'd be like, oh, I didn't like the story. This is me just generalizing to the extreme, but that's right, kind of what I sense is each era's strong points were like plot versus structure. And
yeah.
This is
no, yeah, yeah. That's interesting, because what I think I kind of want to do on this podcast is like when we did What Is the Best Song, we kind of talked about like what should the best song be, and then we, you know, throw out examples of songs that could fit into that. And whereas I like, this is almost like, instead of what's the best movie, it's like a game of Jeopardy where we've got the answer. The best movie is The Shawshank Redemption. So now I want to try and work out the question of like, why is it the best movie?
Yeah, totally. I would say beyond what we've just said, so what have we got so far? It's an inspirational story and it's plotted and paced perfectly, I would say.
Yeah,
those
I
two.
Think, yeah, the inspirational thing, because it's, despite the fact that it has like gang rape and all these like quite you know heavy themes, it's one of the most like immensely watchable films I've ever seen. Like, and I'd say probably when I'm talking about like watchability is that you never have to be in the mood for it.
I mean, I wasn't in the mood for it last night and it was amazing.
But like you can just put it on and you'll always be captivated by it. Like you know, you hear everyone say like, oh, I turn on the TV and Shawshank was halfway through, thought I'll watch 5 minutes of this, and then just carried it through to the end of it.
Totally.
And yep. I think that's such like a universal thing, because I'd say like probably the other like most universally watchable film that I can think of would be Back to the Future. And it's a similar thing of like, it's a feel-good movie, but it also kind of dabbles in a few different genres.
If the entire history of cinema was the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Shawshank is the Avengers. It's peak generic. It's peak by the books, you know?
Right, yeah.
Like what you said, how you brought up that it has like really heavy stuff in it, because I pulled out the DVD of this last night and saw it was R-rated, and I was like, what? Isn't this like a PG film? What happens? And then I was like, oh, right, there's like gang rape and like a scene where they talk about a blowjob, like a sexual assaulting blowjob in it, you know? And I was like, oh yeah, this isn't, but like I would have seen Shawshank for the first time when I was maybe 13. And I remember I watched it with my dad, and watching, you know, when you watch like a movie with your parents and like a sexual scene of some nature comes on and it can be quite awkward.
Your dad comes into the room and goes, oh, what are you watching?
Exactly. With this, it was like, maybe it's because it's violent in nature and it's like depicted incredibly unsexual, but it wasn't awkward. It was like, it was gripping. It was scary, you know? Like,
yeah. There's a difference between, and also this is like a wider societal problem, and especially in America, but like we're kind of desensitized to violence. We're shown that like violence is okay, but like titties and making love aren't. And I wrote my first year of broadcasting school, my like thesis or whatever you'd call it was about this. And that, like, it's ridiculous because, you know, most people in their lives aren't going to witness a violent gang rape or, like, in a prison or, like, someone being beaten to death. You're not going to witness that kind of thing in real life or someone being shot or stabbed or whatever. But, you know, you probably are going to see some breasts. Like,
yeah,
most people in their life and like, you know, breeding and mating is, like, the most natural thing in the world. But murdering someone and beating them senseless are these, like, unnatural things. But that's what we're shown is not okay.
Well, the counter argument that I've always felt to that was that you see someone get murdered on screen and you don't go, yeah, I'm going to go murder someone. Whereas you see a sex scene on screen and it might coax you to seek out such carnal desires.
Right, okay. That's a very, I imagine that's a very within the church kind of thing.
Yeah, raised Christian view of it. Yeah,
but I guess the other thing would be that, like, if you see someone get, like, filleted, that it's special effects, whereas if you see some boobs, it's actually the actress's boobs.
Yeah, it is the actress's boobs. Yeah, so, all right. Famous quote, the good film contains three good scenes and no bad ones. We can agree there are no bad scenes in The Shawshank Redemption, yes?
Yeah.
What are the three good ones?
Like, what are the three defining good scenes?
Yeah. Because,
again, it's like, it's the same kind of thing of just they're kind of all good scenes. But
yeah.
I would say, like, if you're making me pick three, or were you trying to get me to just be like, I can't pick three?
I wasn't trying. I didn't have any agenda.
Right, okay. Because together, I think we could pick out the three. I would say that, like, for me, the... And again, I'm not going to overly explain this because I'm assuming that, like, everyone out there has seen The Shawshank Redemption. But there's Andy getting the beers for the boys on the roof.
Yeah.
Because that's, like, the first introduction to, like, him being...
selfless.
You know, selfless and kind of savvy as well. And then, obviously, the ending, his everything from basically, like, you better be sick or dead in there onwards.
Mm-hmm.
And Brooks's suicide.
Yeah, man. No, I agree. I think this is cheesy and corny, and it's like someone being like, my favorite Simpsons character is Bart, but, like, that scene of Andy with his arms outstretched in the rain chills every time I see that scene. Speaks to my soul, and as you know, as someone who's been a free man his entire life, you get it. Even though, you know, I haven't been in prison for 19 years,
yeah, like,
but I get it.
Yeah, they were in prison for like almost as long as we've been alive.
Yeah, and it doesn't age a day.
Like, imagine if instead of starting primary school, they throw you in prison and you're just getting out now.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, but I mean, like, that's such a great scene. That's why it's the poster for the film, which is, yeah, like, ridiculous. Yeah. And I think maybe that's, like, another thing about this film, because when I first saw it, I think my parents had seen it, and my sister had just seen it, and they were talking about it. And they were like, oh, Richard, you need to watch it. And I was like, oh, okay. I was like, oh, do they get out of prison? And and Emily, cleverly, who also suggested this film, was like, oh, they kind of talk about, like, oh, wouldn't it be great? But, you know, it's not really about that. And so I watched it not knowing that at all. And it was like this amazing, captivating, uplifting experience. But at the same time, I feel like it doesn't hinge on you not knowing that.
No, for sure.
Because
it's called The Shawshank Redemption.
There are movies that, yeah, you get, it has, like, diminishing returns in the surprise factor, and there are movies that people are like, oh god, I wish I could watch that again for the first time. And I feel like Shawshank's not really like that, even though, because it's not really a twist. It does have a bit of a twist of, like, what he was doing the whole time, but your enjoyment of the film is not hampered at all by knowing how it ends and watching it over and over again.
For sure. And I think that would bring me to another point about why what box this checks into being the quintessential best movie ever is I really, really like all the characters. Like, I like the bad guys. You know, like,
yeah.
I love Reed and Andy's relationship. Weirdly, I feel like I can say this is something that's relatively unique to me. One of the lines that always sticks out to me, one of the lines I always remember watching this movie, is after Andy's escaped and Reed's narrating and he's talking about some birds just aren't meant to be caged. Their feathers are just too bright. And he goes on this big spiel and then there's a moment of silence and he goes, I guess I just miss my friend. And I was like, yeah, man, I just this movie's so pure and it's just about friendship. Like, it's cool. It's not like a, it's cool. This is going to, I don't know what this is going to sound like, but it's not a romance. It's a bromance. And there's something special about a bromance.
Yeah. You know? But it's also like in the background, like it's not about their friendship. I mean, no. I guess like it's the theme of the film or whatever, but it's not like the main plot in any way, but it's there. And it's very beautiful, and like you can see it throughout each scene. Like, he does take a liking to him pretty straight away, but then it does develop in a very natural and just beautiful way.
It's a relieving film because you don't watch Andy have to win favor with the prison mates. Like, there's a little bit of trepidation at the start, but there's no like, and that's the day that Andy proved himself to the prison mates. They always kind of like him from the start.
Yeah, that's a thing that, I mean, he does have like the moment of when they like absolutely fall in love with him. But that is a thing as well, is that like, I find a lot of movies that I like as well, that it can often be frustrating watching the characters have to figure out something that you already know. Like, it happens every time you watch a zombie movie. It's like, they're fucking zombies, just like, get on with the plot, please.
Yeah.
And this movie doesn't have any moments like that. You're not like, oh, come on, can you just get to the bit with their friends? Because there is enough liking there to begin with that it then builds very naturally. And I guess that kind of leads me to my next point, is that this film is like paced so perfectly. I thought you were going to build on that, but you know.
We sort of already talked about pacing, but I guess we can go more into it. Sorry, I just foolishly put a piece of candy in my mouth, and as soon as I did it, why'd I do that?
What kind of candy?
Oh, Spaceman sticks.
Oh, nice. I guess we kind of have talked about it, but it never drags. There's no bit where you're like, oh, I hate this bit. There are bits that you would probably, some people I can imagine would skip. But yeah, like.
Well, it's just like a rise and fall flows. Movie without a fall. Like, it's a rise movie where he just keeps rising until he finally achieves freedom. So it's not like a story of a guy who, comes into prison and he's a new fish, and then he builds himself up till he's big dog, and then he his hubris gets the better of him. It's not a tragedy. It's just a real uplifting story.
Yeah. And one thing as well that I was thinking about today, about what makes this film so special in a way, is that like 99% of the people that love this film have never seen it in a cinema.
Because totally.
It bombed on its original release, and then the next year it was the most rented video of that year.
Wow.
But like, I remember my grandma, I mean, I don't remember it because it was a year after I was born, but my grandma went to go see it in the cinema. And apparently for like months, she was like, telling my parents, like, you guys need to watch this film. And then eventually they're like, oh yeah, like, let's check it out. And they got it out from the video store and fell in love with it, as everyone has. But because there's so many great movies that people were just like, oh, seeing that for the first time in the cinema. Whereas like, it's a very rare thing to have seen Shawshank in a cinema. Like, it's like a badge of honor in a way. And because, so any movie that's like popular, people at the time saw it in the cinema, and like, you don't get people bragging that if they were alive at the time, you don't get people bragging they saw Star Wars in the cinema, because everyone did. But like Shawshank, it's like, holy shit, you actually just went to go see this random prison movie that no one else saw.
Yeah, man. No, I mean, I feel like it wouldn't have quite the impact Or, well, I feel like a film packaged that way wouldn't have quite the impact these days. Maybe it would in, like, Oscar season, but, you know, like, even the title feels a little bit too cheesy for today's standards, maybe. I don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah.
So, did you have anything else to bring up along these lines, or should we move on?
Well, yeah, I should say, like, maybe that's another thing about why it's one of the best movies of all time, is that it's in a way, it's not a very cinematic experience. Like, it doesn't rely on that.
Mm. I know what you mean.
And I mean, I guess that could be a bad thing, but...
Yeah, it's a movie in the purest sense that you can just chuck, as we're saying, you can just chuck it on and it's great. And that's the point, is you don't need to see it on a big screen. You don't even need to see it with people. I watched it in bed at 2, you know, finished at like 2 a.m. and I was like, yeah, that was a transformative experience. I've seen this movie 100 times or so, and watching it last night, I feel like I got more out of it than I had since the first time I saw it.
Yeah, so, totally.
Yeah.
Well, so before last night, when was the last time you'd seen it?
It would have been, I don't think I'd watched it outside of high school, so at least 8 years since I'd seen it.
Mm. Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. Like, it's probably been like a decade since I've seen it, which is crazy.
But also, the first time I did see it, it was on TV, and I missed the first 20 minutes. So I'm one of those people, Richard. I'm one of those people who just caught it on TV and started watching and finished it, you know? So I've had that pure Shawshank experience in watching it, you know? It's great. Because that's another thing, is you can just kind of jump in from any point as well. Maybe that's another reason. Yeah. I don't know if that a good movie makes, but that's just an interesting point of reference, I guess.
Yeah. Another thing that's interesting about this film is that, like, it's not, like, Tim Robbins is just Andy Dufresne.
Yeah, what else has Tim Robbins done? I've only ever seen him playing, like, silly roles in comedies. Like, he's in Pick of Destiny and High Fidelity playing, like, really silly roles. I've never seen him do another serious
thing. It's so weird that, like, you're in the greatest film of all time, and yet, like, I mean, people know his name and stuff like that, but he has just, like, he's never really done much else. Because, I mean, they looked at, like, the likes of, like, Tom Hanks, who was busy with Philadelphia. I think he was, like, he didn't want to do it after doing Philadelphia or something like that, because he thought he should just focus on that. Who else did they look? I was reading about it. But, yeah, like, a bunch of different actors. And then, like, for Red as well, you know, it was, like, Harrison Ford. So Tom Cruise turned down the role of Andy Dufresne, actually.
Wow. Well, there you go.
And it's like, it's not necessarily like in these, the film would have been worse in any way, but it's just really interesting that we have this. It's not like a Tom Cruise movie or a Tom Hanks movie. It's not a Tom movie, you know? It's a Tim movie.
It's at both times not even a Morgan Freeman movie, and then extremely a Morgan Freeman movie. You know, this is what when people make the joke about Morgan Freeman narrating heaps, this is one of the biggest, you know, qualifiers.
Yeah, this is just what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, well, shall we now ruin what we've all said by pitching a sequel to it? Because that's probably another thing that's so great about it, is that it's sequel-less, you know? And so it exists as this pure thing that was never adulterated in any way. So that's kind of cool. But, like, so there hasn't been, as far as I can tell, there's no sequel to the short story or anything like that.
Mm.
The only thing that would be worth mentioning, I guess, is that it is set within Stephen King's wider universe. His Castle Rock universe thing.
Dark Tower. Yeah.
No, Dark Tower's different, though.
All right.
Or is it? I don't know.
Anyway,
don't at me. But there is a show on TV at the moment called Castle Rock features Shawshank Prison in it. So Shawshank has made an appearance, but we never found out what happened to the characters. Not that, like, I feel like we don't need to. It's pretty satisfying, like, ending.
Yeah, he uses a lot of those things, like Derry, Maine, because Maine, I think, is where he grew up. So a lot of the stories take place there. Yeah, like. And I think it's Shawshank Redemption that it comes from a collection of novellas, short story things, and it's got The Body, which was adapted into Stand By Me, was in it as well.
Yeah, I can find that out. I think, I know The Body was in it.
Yeah, and then there was one other, Apt Pupil, which was adapted into a movie starring Ian McKellen. And then there's The Breathing Method is the only film that hasn't been made into a movie, although, according to this, they're making one in 2020.
Yeah, yeah.
So that whole thing will be made. Yay.
Nice. There we go.
Oh, Scott Derrickson's directing it that film fame.
Yeah, that made film.
Hellraiser, Hellseeker, that's it.
Oh, okay. And Doctor Strange, that's probably...
Oh, yeah. It wasn't Hellseeker he directed, it was Inferno.
Yes. It was. So, do you have a sequel idea? Dude, where's my sequel? That's what this segment's called.
I feel like... The sequel just needs to be called Shawshank.
Right.
What it would be about... Although, maybe... Actually, no. What I'd like to see is a TV show similar to, Orange is the New Black or Oz that's just set in Shawshank Prison. And it's something like, a prison show, but it's set in, the 40s. And you've got the same... corrupt guards and everything like that, and it's just called Shawshank. So it's it's just a 40s prison show that's cashing in on one of the greatest movies of all time.
I that's somewhat what my thinking was as well. I think you could do it as an anthology series and have it go into a different decade.
And that's really cool, because you have the same actor, people age up actors and get different versions of people and stuff like that. That's a really good idea, actually. Yeah, Shawshank, an anthology series. Because Brooke says that he had been in Shawshank Prison since 2005, which is crazy. Yeah. He was and then got put on book duty in 1912, which is, over 100 years ago.
Yeah.
you started there. And maybe even Brooks is your character that you follow.
You could do Red, Young Red, first coming to prison.
Yeah,
this feels very cashing in.
Yeah,
I don't want this
Morgan
to
Freeman's son played is the photo of young Morgan Freeman.
Okay.
And also, there's on the DVD I had, there's this weird short film parody of it, set in an office, I think, and it's got Morgan Freeman's son playing. Morgan playing that character.
I've seen the one thing I remember of this was do you know about Jib Jab?
Jib Jab, yeah.
Yeah, they did a rap.
Please state Shawshank your name. I'm Andy Dufresne. You've done a murder for the state of Maine.
If you ever get out, go to Zwatanejo.
Man, that guy sure was an a-hole.
Yeah, that's right. Or it was the other part I remember was
I'll shake you. No, thank you.
When Brooks gets out, he's like, not much to do, so I'll just hang a...
Yeah, that's fun. I was wondering if that was going to come up, but yeah. I was thinking about that today. I think one of my friends had it on his iPod Classic, and we would watch it in maths class.
Yeah.
And then yesterday, because it was one of those things, I was like, I just remember that. Please state your name. I'm Andy Dufresne. You're on trial for murder in the state of Maine. And then I was like, is that even actually a thing? Because I haven't seen it in 10 years. Yeah. So, and then I Googled Shawshank rap and I was like, oh my God, this takes me fucking back so hard.
I remember I showed it to someone and it finished and they were like, that wasn't very funny. And I was like, yeah, it's not that funny actually. It's not even that good.
Yeah.
Mm. All right. Well, I'm pretty happy to call it there. I think we've generic movie podcasted.
Oh yeah, you reckon?
Yeah. What did you have something else you wanted to talk about?
Oh, I don't know, mate. The thing I was talking about is called The Shark Tank Redemption. It's 25 minutes long. It's on YouTube. And yeah, it's a parody of it. It's set in an office.
It sounds abysmal. Sounds terrible. Sounds abysmal. Like, I would not want to watch it.
For film franchise follow-ups, we need to start generic_movie_podcast.exe follow-ups. We will watch
generic_movie_follow-ups. Yeah, all right. Well, let's do that then. But yeah, other than that, hey, go watch The Shawshank Redemption. I love it. I love it so much. I forgot how much I loved it.
Yeah, it is really good. I think it's one of those films
that... it's really good, but I don't really like it.
I think maybe I don't... Like, I can say it's objectively one of, like, the best films ever made, but I think I don't have as much of a personal connection to it to list it as, like, one of my favorites, you know?
Yeah, I'm similar, I think. It depends how long my list of favorites is allowed to be. It's, you know, yeah. Like, if I'm considering, although, I don't know, watching it again last night, I kind of want to upgrade it into, like, the same breath as the other movies I list whenever someone asks me my favorite movies.
Mm.
But, yeah, I don't know, man. Guess we'll see what happens next time someone asks me what my favorite movies is. they never say, what's your favorite movies? They say, what's your favorite movie? And I don't have one. I don't have one. I don't.
It depends on who I'm talking to and how and what I reckon they'll respond best to, because I've got like a few different answers that I can say, and you know, if it's someone that I want to be like have an actual discussion, like, you know, somebody I'll just be like, oh, Back to the Future or whatever, or like Back to the Future, like Hot Fuzz would be like my go-to ones that I would normally say. But there's other people that can be like, you know, Big Fish, and they're like, oh well, yeah, I haven't actually seen that one, but I'm quite a big fan of Tim Burton.
There you go. Well, I mean, yeah, what else, like, what else does Frank Darabont did The Walking Dead and then left The Walking Dead? So yeah, there's so not much else adapted, going on.
He's adapted 3 Stephen King films as well. I've actually never seen The Green Mile.
He did 2 Stephen King prison movies in a row.
Yeah. And because Shawshank was his first film, I believe.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
And I think that's why Tom Cruise turned it down, because it was the director's first film. Mm. But yeah, and he also did The Mist, which is like, not very good, but has a great ending.
I hate the ending. The ending is the reason I don't like it.
Really?
That's why I would say it's not a good movie.
Us to watch The Mist and debate the ending.
Oh shit!
Then.
They're going to as well, if they listen, I guess.
They won't. They don't listen to this shit.
Yeah, please listen and comment on these posts, because it starts to feel very lonely posting these and they get like one like and a comment. So we've got a new patron today. So we've got, I'll give them a shout out again. Please comment and like on Patreon when you see this. I mean, I feel like the problem with Patreon is that you don't, it doesn't stay with you. So, like, you can just go, you get an email when there's a post, but if someone comments on the same post as you, you don't see it. So maybe, I don't know, I know of some Patreons that have a Facebook group that is essentially connected to it. So if that's what people want, maybe sing out to that as well. Our new patron today's name is Alexander. He joins the ranks of Alice, Ben, Brent, Craig, David, Emily, Holly, Isaac, Josh, Josiah, Kate, Kieran, Lockie. Oh no, Lockie's not one. He's just viewing it. Michael, Nick, Sam, Sarah, Dog Hair Network, and Tyler Braley. I don't know why Tyler got his last name, but there you go.
Just rolls off the tongue.
And Ben. I read some of these out that aren't actually paying.
Oh.
Lockie, Josiah, and Ben aren't actually paying, so shame them out if you know them in real
life. I think with like Patreon is that it's real easy once you're set up to just check the RSS feed in your podcast thing and then ignore it.
Yeah. Unless you've got the podcast app that I have, in which you can't do that. Cool. All right. Let's close this out.
Okay.
And yeah, goodbye. Thank you for listening.
See ya.
Get busy listening, or get busy not listening to this podcast.
Thank you very much. Good night.
Thank you so much for listening to this, guys. Once again, if you missed all the shit that I had to go through at the start, you should donate to our Movember campaign to help change the face of men's health in New Zealand. You should join our Discord server and chat with us about all things pop culture and all things Culpopture. And, of course, you should join our Patreon at www.patreon.com/Culpopture. And if you're not going to do any of those things, at the very least, what you could do is find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, email us at culpopturemedia@gmail.com, and, you know, support us in whatever way you can. So thank you very much for listening to this episode, and I hope you enjoy it.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.